remember the lesson of George Washington crossing the Delaware on Christmas night. You know, nobody fights on Christmas night. That would be rude. You know, the Christmas holidays would be a really good time to do this sort of thing if I were the president and his minions. So people need to be alert. And frankly, if you want your independence and your freedom, you're going to have to fight for it. It's not going to be given to you by anyone.
Indeed, truer words never spoken. Well, thank you so much. This has been a really stimulating conversation, and I think a very valuable one. I haven't heard much like this anywhere, so it's great to hear it here on our own airwaves, KBO Community Radio. Thanks again, Ted. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Anytime.
Okay. All right, and I guess that'll wrap it up. We only got a minute till the hour. This is Paul Rowland with KBOO and Wednesday Talk Radio. Bye-bye.
You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO is excited to be a part of the Willamette Week Give Guide this year. When you support KBOO through Give Guide, not only does it support your favorite community radio station, it also gives a little back to you in return. When you donate $10 or more, you'll get full access to hundreds of local coupons in the Chinook Book app, plus a few other goodies. Available while supplies last. So donate to KBOO on GiveGuide today at kboo.fm/give. Thanks.
Welcome to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. We feature interviews with leaders in the community focusing on issues important to Washington County.
Today, our show was taped during the volatile COVID-19 pandemic. With our studio unavailable to us and our commitment to social distancing, we are using the Zoom platform to record today's show.
Welcome to Inside Washington County. I'm Rob Solomon. Today, we have a marvelous show. We have a guest host and a very, very important topic. There are at least two distinct kinds of racism. One is owned by an individual who behaves differently towards others based not on their character or personality, but on the basis of the racial group they appear to represent. The other, the kind we want to discuss today, is systemic racism. This exists where a group of any kind exhibits a culture of racism leading to exclusion, if not abuse. When groups engage in systemic racism, those targeted are most often kept from having power. We're going to look at how power is denied and what all of us can do to promote equity. Today, we are pleased to have as our special guest host, community activist Hector Hinosa. Thank you, Hector, for hosting us, for hosting our show today, and Hector will introduce today's guests.
Thank you very much, Rob. Now, first, I want to thank you and our producer and editor Rick Bolton, and you, of course, as a host of the show, to sharing your stage and platform to add our voice to a most timely subject given today's civil unrest in our country regarding our unfinished business of social justice, I like to call it. It is my pleasure to welcome three special guests, experts, each with a PhD in their area of discipline and professionalism, experience in the subject matter. First is Dr. Louis Whitebear, an advocate in our Native American community. Dr. Whitebear is the Assistant Director of the Native American Longhouse at Oregon State University in Corvallis. Dr. Waiji Saeed is an elder in our immigrant Muslim community, co-founder and president of the Muslim Educational Trust Center in Tigard, and Dr. Matthew Hennessy, who is an advocate in our Black African American community. Pastor Hennessy is also the CEO of Agape Resource Group and senior pastor at Vancouver First Baptist Church in Portland. The first question is that it's clear that immigrant and community people of color face socioeconomic hardships. How can we overcome those disparities? Dr. Saeed?
Yeah, thank you very much, Hector and Rob and Rick and Luhi and Pastor Hennessy. I came here in 1988, January 88, that I started. Nothing wrong to be an American. America is beautiful from within. America is ugly in the foreign policy. But America from within the society is a beautiful. It is a place that, you know, you can seek a lot of opportunities, even though America was built in the genocide of the Native American and the African slavery, you know. Still, America, comparing to other many countries in the world, still better in so many ways. If you organize yourself, if you plan yourself well, you'll be able to succeed, you know. So we championed here at the Trust what's called the positive integration, or the integration of the Muslim community, you know, to become productive and to become an added value in the society, as their foremothers and forefathers were cities of light that were created in 900 years, you know.
Thank you. Pastor Hennessy.
Thank you so much, Hector. It's great to be with you today and with Rob and Rick and Dr. White Bear and Dr. Saeed. Thank you very much for the question. In my opinion, it takes the determination and the initiative to be a friend and a partner. Secondly, it takes the importance of wanting to learn and understand the challenges, the issues that people that may not look like you, what they are. It does not mean that you will understand everything, but it does mean that you're on the road to begin to understand. And thirdly, really try to make their life easier. What can we do to make transition easier? What can we do to make your life, your family's life, your opportunity for health, for education, for welfare be taken care of as much as possible?
Great, thank you. Dr. White Bear.
If I'm thinking about a systemic level when it comes to economic hardship and how to help each other out, I really want to focus on what can we change systematically. So like on an individual basis, we can do a lot, right? We can help each other out in various ways. But I think about the ways that entire groups of people are classified as labor to be exploited, and the ways that indigenous lands are continued to be framed as a resource to exploit and to use.
Great, thank you so much. For our listeners and you, Rob, just to sort of quantify for the Latino community, on average in the United States, we are at about $55,000 per year in earned income. In the Latino community, we're at about $35,000 a year. The people that I work with here in Washington County on the streets are closer to $28,000 a year. So just to give you an idea of this economic hardship and what that, how that translates to our families. Great. Let's go to question number two, and we'll start with Dr. Hennessy, Dr. Weiber, and then Dr. Saeed. How do we overcome the race-based inequities in obtaining an education?
First of all, I think again, wonderful question, but I think the first thing we must do is really the systematic understanding of where the educational field is, to recognize that indeed there are racial barriers, there are disparities. These do exist, and for people to really, on the one hand, root it out, call it for what it is, and really begin to put in place structures that begin to tear it down. And that comes from not just the policymakers, but also policymakers all the way to the classroom. It also goes back to the funders at the state level, in the legislature, the governor, the various members of the of government, from mayors and county chairs and stuff like that. This has got to be an issue for them. because the goal is for everyone to be able to have a chance and really to be able to take care of their family and do great things in life.
Amen. Dr. Whitebear.
Yeah, I think that a lot of it has to do with how children are viewed as all the same sometimes in the school setting. Like, everybody learns the same, not seeing the cultural differences in communication or even the histories, the relationships in the communities, and those external stressors that come along with being a kid in school are often overlooked. And so I think besides the very clear, we need an entire curriculum revamp in all schools and public education, that's pretty clear. And if it's not for folk, they should probably ask themselves why they don't think that we need a curriculum revamp, especially when it comes to US history. All educators should know the history of Oregon, the way that it was written in the Constitution to exclude Black people, as well as the genocide that occurred here. Those should be like the top two things all teachers should learn as they're being certified in to be teachers, so they understand the histories of the kids that they're serving in those families. Like, it wasn't that long ago. It was pretty recent. It's just a couple generations back, one generation back, not that long ago that it was, the exclusion thing was written out of the Oregon Constitution. So it's like those things right there help understand like the systematic issues that are in place in education and how it was built in this state in particular. And so I think like those are some really beginning points, is like reevaluating the SAT and what does it mean for teachers to have this built into the standards of like, you need to know these things for sure.
Dr. Saeed.
I second what our dear sister Lohi and dear brother Matt has said, but also I'll design, you know, a program for anti-racism in our public school. We need an intensive anti-racist training, you know, for our teachers, for our district leaders, you know. And I think this is a must, you know, for anybody to get a license, you know, for to become a teacher or to become a superintendent, they need to go into intensive, you know, program that teach them, you know, equity and inclusion, you know. For me as a Muslim, I don't look at the color of the skin, because, you know, for us, you know, Islam encompasses, you know, all of this colors of God, you know, that the beauty colors of God. But sometimes, you know, when, you know, it's a must for us to design, you know, this kind of program, you know, an intense program, you know, to train, you know, teachers and leaders, you know, about racism, you know. I will invest more, you know, in the poor districts as equal, if it's not more, than the rich district. You know, unfortunately, the rich district today, they get more money than the poor districts. It should be the opposite, you know. I will invest more in the poor districts, you know, than the rich districts.
Amen. Thank you. Now, you know, even if we had the resources, and I think you're right on target with that one, the teachers, the educators, the professionals in the classroom working with our students, if we were to take color off the table and off the looks of our students and focus on socioeconomically disadvantaged students, culturally disadvantaged students, and academically disadvantaged students. So we took a look at the SAT test scores, for example, and identified those students that need help in order to avoid being at risk. Those that are, English is not the first language in their home. It's a good chance they're academic or culturally disadvantaged. And of course, socioeconomically, we know those students that are poor that can't afford to even bring the materials to class. So as educators, we need to focus on those types of outcomes for our intervention. What are some of the top social justice concerns you have personally experienced or encountered? And this time, let's start with Dr. Whitebear.
I think one of the biggest ones, just because of the identities I hold, is the complete invisibilization of Indigenous peoples and how that's so prevalent across the board. And politics and society and education, and how that continued erasure is systematically part of continuing colonizing these lands. Like, a lot of indigenous folk view the relationship with this country as an ongoing colonial project, because it is. And we didn't ask for this. We didn't ask for our lands to be taken over. We didn't ask for genocide. We didn't ask for lands to continue to be destructed. And so I think that like, understanding how invisibilized we are as indigenous people is really important. And understanding that when people are using hashtags like hashtag land back, that we're talking about restoring relationships with land and restoring those connections. And also in terms of the federal tribes, for them to be able to have somewhat of a say over what happens on their own lands, because of that that severed process that as a result of colonization. And so, like, I would say, like, to think in terms of, like, to do, like, action item things, like, what are people doing right now to work with their local communities, with the local tribes? Like, whose land are you on? In Washington County, are folk working with the Grand Ronde tribes? Are they reaching out in their efforts, especially when it has to do with the matters of land and waters? So I think that continued occupation is definitely one. There's a whole lot of other ones. I'm really passionate about the advocacy work with murdered and missing indigenous women. That's a huge social justice issue that I'm personally invested in helping address some of those larger pieces. It has a lot to do with legal infrastructure and jurisdiction, but it also has to do with that continued disappearance and erasure of indigenous people, and in this case, quite literally, in the way that indigenous women's bodies are viewed as disposable objects of desire, and people get away with it way, way too much. And so I think those pieces, the land back, the protecting waters and lands, and murdered and missing indigenous women kind of go hand in hand. It's about continuing relationships and continuing presence. And so for me, those are some of the top, on the very top. There's a whole lot of other ones that I know of and I'm involved with. And I know locally that there's a lot of work being done by indigenous activists in Washington County and just the Portland metro area in general. So I encourage folk to learn more about what's going on over there locally and what's being done to address some of the homelessness and some of the domestic violence and some of the educational disparities that exist locally over there too.
Absolutely. Dr. Saeed.
I grew up with 9 sisters, you know, and my mother used to tell me all the time, you know, you don't need to understand your sisters, you know, you need to listen to them. I think what we lack today is that listening to each other, you know. And I think it's very important that we recognize that the more we get to know each other, the better we are going, you know, to deliver. 5 years ago, we had issues, you know, within the DA office in Washington County. You know, a lot of people wanted to fire the deputy DA, you know, because of her racial remarks, you know, that she attacked everybody. But, you know, we sometimes humans, we need to forget that, you know, the best gift, you know, or blessing that God has given us is the power of the intellect. Sometimes we need to call one another and try to reason with one another, you know. Yesterday is not in our hand, and today is going to go by 12 midnight tonight. But tomorrow is in our hand, you know. So the more we plan, the more we get to know each other, the better deliveries of inclusion, you know, and acceptance, you know, that we are going to have. It's always the story of Abel and Cain repeats itself, you know, and manifests itself in every society. Would I lie to you that sometimes we Muslims, we become prejudiced against each other? Yes, we are. Jewish people, they become prejudiced against each other. Yes, they are. Christians, you know. Yesterday, I was listening to a lady, you know, a professor of Catholic, you know, theology. Her name is Dr. Anna Moreland. She wrote a book on the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. She is a devout Catholic. She is, you know, professor of divinity. She gave Muhammad, you know, the due respect that a theologian has given, you know. And that's what matters. You have to speak the truth. You know, the truth, you know, that sometimes we hide it intentionally. You know, a lot of crimes that happen, you know, is unfortunately in the name of God, you know. You know, a lot of stereotype that happened, you know, it, in the name of God. A great Jewish scholar by name of David Westerstein from Vanderbilt University, he wrote in the Jewish Chronicle in 2014, he said, if it wasn't Islam, Judaism wouldn't have survived Christian Europe. How many Jewish people knows that? Not a lot, because sometimes we are marginalized, intentionally marginalized. This is why we have anti-Semitism, anti-Jewish sentiments, Islamophobia, anti-indigenous people, anti-blacks, anti and so on. So when somebody, I was giving a Friday sermon, you know, and I said, Black Lives Matters, my sermon was, you know. Somebody told me, all lives matters. I told him, yes, all lives matter, but in this context, Black Lives Matters. If Black Lives Matters, then we will be include every single life. The black people intentionally has been ignored for 400 years. Nothing wrong to come today as a president of the United States, you know, I said I'm going to pay reparation for every single black individual that has traced their background into slavery and give them, you know, free health and free education to public universities and give them everything that is necessary to integrate them, you know. Reagan did apologize to the Japanese American, you know, and he compensated them. You know, Germany has compensated the Jewish people for the Holocaust, and nothing wrong for America to humble itself and say, we are sorry, we were wrong, even though Rick has nothing to do with the slavery. Rick Paulson, you know, our producer, or X and Y and Z, you know, but nothing wrong to say, we are sorry. We are the majority of people. We're sorry to the Iraqi people. We're sorry to the Afghan people. We're sorry to the Syrian people. We are sorry to the Yemeni people. We are sorry to the indigenous, to the Latinos, to X and Y and Z. So our biggest challenge is the bigotry within ourselves and the racism within ourselves. Every day I wake up in the morning and I say, oh Allah, oh God, the Almighty, the most merciful, the most compassionate, help me to become a good person. Help me to become a great inspiring person. Help me to do everything that is necessary to be an added value. And believe it or not, I pray for Mr. Trump. I said, oh God, guide him and cleanse his heart, you know, from bigotry and hate. You know, so it's very important that we fight this bigotry within ourselves. If you are able to handle that, you'll be able to handle everything that is possible. My mother used to say, Wajdi, don't point fingers towards your siblings, you know. There are three fingers pointing towards you. Manage your issues before you manage other people's issues.
Amen. Yeah. Yes, Dr. Hennessy, your turn.
First of all, I'm very inspired by the responses you've already heard from Dr. Whitebear and Dr. Saeed. I would only add a few things, and I assume that this letter, this question was about my personal work and social action and social justice and things of that
nature.
I'm reminded of the beautiful words of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who said that if we on this earth cannot live together as brothers, then we, brothers and sisters, and I always add that because in his era, language was far more male-dominated, but brothers and sisters, we shall perish together as fools, meaning that from my perspective, the original sin of this country has been the racism and the bigotry that it was founded upon, to have learned everything it did from indigenous people and then moved them to various places, or the ways that exploitation has occurred, which has been spoken of very eloquently here by my two teammates, that same mindset is very much at work today, and it's very much a reason why we still have the problems we have today. And my work in social justice has been really around how our skin color has been weaponized from the beginning of our being forced to be here. As I've said in lecture after lecture, we're the one group that didn't ask to come here. we were the ones that were forced to come here. And then after we got here and on the way here, we were brainwashed and everything else. My thoughts are that, as my brother, Dr. Wajdi, has mentioned Black Lives Matter, and I so respect that term today and grateful that because of the killing of George Floyd, so many people have become woke about the injustices and about the issues, whereas people, if it had not, my belief is, if it had not been for the pandemic, if it had not been for the person filming, I believe that, unfortunately, George Floyd's killing would have been just like any other black or brown killing that has gone on that was not codified on film. The fact that this 8 minutes and 46 seconds with an officer who not only leaned in and placed his knee on Mr. Floyd's neck, if you look at that film, what got me the most, that video, what got me the most is that his facial expression never changed. He heard the cries of Mr. Floyd for help to survive. He heard his own group that was there, the officers that were there. He heard the crowd, and yet he put his hands in his pocket and he continued to be where he was, placing his knee on Mr. Floyd's neck and did not care. It reminded me of the very unfortunate video of Bull Connor in the 1960s in Birmingham, who was the police commissioner that they used when the demonstrators wouldn't move. He used the fire hoses on the mothers and children and men who were there. And when a reporter asked him, how can you do that and see so much injury, so much pain? He said, it's just a matter of mind over matter. I don't mind and they don't matter. And that is exactly the picture, in my view, of this officer and what this officer has done and what the experience of the black and brown and indigenous and other areas of our society have dealt with. And I think it's important, number one. And so the work I'm involved with is really how we begin to really systemically break down the barriers that cause problems between my community and the police community. Because quite frankly, even though I'm a black pastor, when I get in my car to answer a call, I'm a black man. And that's exactly how I see myself. And I am very careful about, even if the speed limit is 35 miles an hour, I'm going to set my cruise control on 35 miles per hour, because I don't want to have any police officer to feel that he or she has to stop me for something I didn't do right, because I know that that could be my life. And so therefore, the reason why I continue to work with IPAC and try to work building bridges when it comes to the work with police and community relations is really about not pointing my finger at the police, but it's really about how do we together learn and understand and get to the bottom of what happens and what causes particularly a white police officer, male white police officer, to almost unload his magazine on a person who is black or brown. There's something to it. We're going to get to the bottom of it, but quite frankly, there's something to it. And so I look forward to the day when we can all, and in fact, I'm encouraged today by those who are willing to get in the conversation, to be uncomfortable, as Brian Stevenson's mentioned in his book, Just Mercy, to say that we've got to be willing to do four things. One, be proximate. So get close to the problem. Secondly, recognize that together we can change the narrative. Thirdly, be ready to be uncomfortable. And then fourthly, be willing to be slaves to hope. And remember that it's hope that gives us the opportunity to work together and make a difference. And it's hope that really generates a program like the one you're leading today.
Great. Thank you so much. And just in closing, I want to thank both of you and Dr. Hennessy as well for taking time out to join us and voice our concerns. And with that, I turn it back over to you, Rob. Thank you very much.
Well, and thank you, Hector. Thank you so much to our guests. And boy, this is our first co-host, and I've certainly enjoyed it. Thank you so much for your work, Hector, in putting this together. What we've learned today is that systemic racism is real, and it's here in Washington County. Racism is just ugly, and it's something that takes away from the potential that a diverse population has to offer. We had a great conversation today. Once again, my thanks for that. But the conversations need to continue, not just among experts. They need to continue among disadvantaged populations and, frankly, among advantaged populations as well. If you have comments out there to our listeners, please get in touch with us through our website. And one more time, thank you to Hector. Thank you to our guests.
Thank you for listening to Inside Washington County with Rob Solomon. Go to our website, insidewashco.org, to contact us or leave comments on this interview. This series is produced by Rick Paulson. You're listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Engineering Committee